welcome everyone to Rock M Nation Podcast. This is episode 7 of season 5 of Dive Cuts. It's still kind of weird that we've done this for 5 seasons. I am your host, Sam Snelling. This is the Missouri Basketball Season Preview Podcast. We've made it. The season starts tomorrow. We're recording this Monday night. With me, as always, is my friend, my compatriot, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
It's a great time, Sam, because it means I can go through KenPom and put together my weekly watching schedule. It's nice to have familiar and warm routines back in my life.
The question, Matt, are you going to, in fact, watch Missouri play basketball despite the Champions Classic kicking off at the same time?
Yeah, because I blog about this particular team, so as not a professional, but a committed, someone with a committed habit, I'll watch this team tip off. And who knows, I might be able to catch the early part of Kansas-Michigan State and the back end of Kentucky-Duke.
So there you go.
I'll see parts of them.
I think that's my plan also. Mainly because we've spent the better part of, what is this, early November? Their season was over mid-March. So that's what, like 8 months?
Yep.
The better part of those 8 months talking about this complete roster reset that Konzo Martin has sort of embarked upon. There are 3 returning players, 2 of which played any sort of significant minutes. Of course, that being Kobe Brown and Javon Pickett. Jordan Wilmore is also a guy who has some pretty good reports coming out of camp as far as like how he's been playing and the impact that he's had. He's certainly big, Matt.
He's 70 pounds lighter and still big. So,
he didn't shrink in the height department, just around the middle.
Yeah, that's the most important thing there. Hopefully that makes him more agile for however far he can stray away from the rim. But
I know we all see the little clips that like Mizzou Hoops shares on Twitter, and there was just this one where he had this like left-handed dunk and it just looked like me on a Nerf rim, you know, and it's ridiculous that you could be that big and like the ball, I just stuck it in his left hand, dunked it without barely jumping. It's, you know, the clip that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It was in live action, so he dunked kind of on somebody. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, just stick your hand up there and trust your wingspan, man. But no, it feels weird in the sense that like you think about the team and the hypotheticals and, you know, how they could look, and tomorrow we get to actually see what they look like as an entity, as a group. I think that's sort of, you know, the hardest thing to sort of like gauge what your expectations are for opening night. And I think I told you before we came on, it's just, you kind of just want to sit there with stat broadcast on one screen and just watch them play basketball. Like, I think you want to be disconnected from a lot of other conversation and just sort of watch what this team is. And, you know, tweeting is part of what we do, but I feel like tomorrow everyone would just be better just to sit there and watch this team without have as few screens bothering you as possible and just watch what this team is. And then don't have any immediate reaction to it. Just sort of like let it digest and just let it wash over you. It's like a first, you know, sip of a wine. Just really take it all in and just see what it is that the staff has put together. And then, you know, let a couple games go by and then start spitting out some impressions. But that's not the world we live in. So I'm sure by the second media timeout, people will be flipping the hell out over something.
Yeah, it is one of those things. So I actually don't know who's going to be on Twitter duty tomorrow. It'll probably be me in some respect. I feel like I do have quite a bit of those responsibilities during basketball games. And there is a large part of me that I just like watching basketball. And as we've been talking about this team and talking about the pieces now for so long, it is something where I really just want to sit down and see what this is about. I don't necessarily think that we're going to see, like, you know, the best Missouri can be tomorrow night. But I don't necessarily think, like, that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in seeing, you know, how these pieces sort of fit together. I am curious, you know, who they're going to start. I want to know how many minutes guys are going to play. I want to know who's 6, 7, 8 off the bench. I want to see how many freshmen get in and for how long. Like, these are all the things that I'm more curious about, and how they play. I think I'm less worried about how they're going to play in game one and more worried about how they're going to be playing in game 20. Because I think this is going to be one of those things is a little bit of a work in progress over the course of the season. You sort of start to see guys figure it out, you know, as the season goes on. Hopefully it happens sooner before game 20. You know, but I always think, you know, how you are playing at the end of the season is much more indicative of how your season went than how you play in the first game.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is, you know, last year when I tracked lineups, Zoe really didn't experiment all that much. Like, what you saw in game one was by and large what you saw in game 12, what you saw in game 18, and, you know, even to a certain extent into the NCAA tournament. So there was just, there wasn't really like a lot of like, okay, what, you know, what's the hierarchy here? You know, what are the roles? We all sort of knew that. And that's the beauty of continuity. It was more or less sort of just evaluating execution for that group. And it was like, okay, we know how they want to play. We have a sense for, you know, base offense, you know, how are they doing, you know, keeping this car on the road? We have no clue even what the car looks like right now. We have no clue if this team can, you know, drive it competently. It's, or even, you know, who's going to be driving the car whatsoever. So it's,
and we may not even know after watching them play Central Michigan because
no. And so I think that's always the thing here is, you know, the beauty, like I said, of the last couple of years was you kind of had a sense for how everything would fit together. And it was just, are they going to be able to optimize everything on the roster? Now I think it's just like, okay, what can this roster do? And then once we figure that out, then we can sort of, I think, assess how well they do the things they're being asked to do. So it's going to be kind of piecemeal, but I'm excited to see what that looks like. I think this is, as we've talked about, you know, it's a reset year, and it, you know, I don't know if the expectations are, you know, if there's a ton of pressure this year, but in some ways there is, you know, to set this thing up for what's going to be, you know, what's going to come in, you know, 22, 23 and so on. For this thing to work, you need to see some various players or pieces come together in a way that, you know, that shows, okay, this plan that they've put together is not only coherent, but it's functional. Like, it works, and, you know, is it consistent all the time? No, but, you know, like, the idea here is sound. And now it's just about making sure the right pieces are there and, you know, building off of it. But we need a starting point, and that's what tomorrow's going to be.
Yeah, and so, like, there isn't pressure, like you said, but there is also, you know, because even though, you know, Konzo Martin has a lot of respect around the country, a lot of people seem to think he's pretty awesome. And he has a functional working relationship that predates Missouri with our new athletic director. You know, the whole thing about, like, this new athletic director is the fact that, you know, like, she has her own initiative to make sure that your primary funding sources are working well. And so she has to take a really keen eye to the Missouri basketball program. You and I have kind of talked about, like, the things that we think that the admin can do to kind of support basketball and make basketball a more competitive product, you know, than it's been for a while. But ultimately, it's going to be, you know, what she thinks, you know, Desiree Reed Francois, what she thinks the direction of the program is under Konzo, and if that's suitable for Missouri. You know, and that's why I think, like, I certainly don't think that Missouri is a team that has to be in the NCAA tournament this year for you to think that things are working well with the current plan. But if you're bringing back like 75 to 80% of a roster next year, you're adding in, you know, a top 50 level, you know, four-star talent into that roster, you know, and recruiting is going well in 2023, then certainly like your outlook on where Missouri is, you know, maybe if they're making the tournament next year, not this year, like the trajectory of that program is certainly making you feel a lot better than where it was back in March, as, you know, they're adding, you know, a bunch of guys that a lot of people don't know really anything about. And they had a recruiting class that, you know, while you like the long-term growth, isn't one that is going to wow you with any potential lottery picks.
No, and this is a roster that I think is meant to sort of bridge the gap there. You know, the transfers have, you know, most of them have, I think, 2 years of eligibility left. You know, I really think, you know, you look at the four guys they brought in as sort of that bridge, while the five freshmen and, you know, Aiden Shaw and Christian, you know, Jones next year sort of grow into that core. You know, that's what I think this has always been when I viewed it that way, is, you know, this was, you know, instead of going out and just signing 7, 6, 7, 8 guys and not having the classes balanced, this was always meant to be sort of a bridge program. Now we're just going to see how sturdy that is, and, you know, whether those guys can hold up and do what they need to do. And, you know, say whatever you want to say about where they pulled those guys from, you get the sense that Missouri likes its evaluation ability when it comes to mid-major guys and making that jump. You know, I think Cash and Drew in some ways are outliers, but you got to give the staff credit because they found guys who are outliers. So they're going to trust their evaluation skills and go get those guys. And I think that's really what tomorrow is for me. You know, the five freshmen, I think if everything's going well, you know, at most maybe Anton Brookshire is the guy that's going to be a 16 minute a night guy in the thick of the season. That they need the four transfers to come in and show pretty good and pretty quick acclimation to moving up to the high major level. And that's really, I think, what, you know, if you had to pick one thing I'll be watching, it's what does the first four or five games from that group look like? And for, you know, Central Michigan, it's really sort of a good test because it's kind of the caliber of teams. You know, it's a MAC team. You know, Jerron Coleman saw, you know, Central Michigan, you know, in his time at Muncie. You know, the Horizon League is comparable to the MAC. So, you know, it's one where you'd expect to see Amari Davis sort of play well against this type of competition. And, you know, Ryan DeGray played in a better league in the A-10. So, to me, I think, like, the only kind of, like, specific player things I want to look at is the four guys that Missouri brought in to sort of, I think, bridge or be the guys who can sort of ease that pressure on the freshmen were picked because the staff thought this group can play at the high major level, and they showed that against, you know, this level of competition. So you would expect them, at least in the first two or three games, to look not dominant, but look comfortable and look like they can really handle themselves in that sort of setting. I think the real test is going to come with SMU, but this feels like one thing I think where you want to see over the first couple of games, at least the transfers, get out of the blocks pretty quickly against the kind of competition Mizzou's going to see.
Yeah, I think essentially what you're sort of hoping for, and our recording schedule is such that we will record after the UMKC game. So Missouri plays Tuesday, and then they don't play again until the following Monday. Mm-hmm. So what we are actually, essentially, this is a season preview pod. We are looking at really two games directly, but I kind of look at that first block of three games as like, this is us sort of working out some kinks and seeing things against live competition, in three games that they should win and win comfortably. So just looking at KenPom, and this is just Missouri as the 95th rated team, which I still take umbrage with the fact that for some reason KenPom seems to project that Missouri will field its worst defense under Konzo Martin. But I think you're probably good for at least 10 spots higher than that. But they're projected to beat Central Michigan by 18. They're projected to beat UMKC by 13, and then they're projected to beat Northern Illinois by 20. So these are all games that are 90-ish percent and higher
win probabilities.
Of win probability, games that you should absolutely win. And certainly, like, anything's possible in the game of basketball. You don't want to, you know, count victories here. But that's how I like, and I think that smart coaches will set their schedules up in smart ways. And I think Konzo knew that there were certain games he was not going to be able to get around. And so they kind of front loaded and got like these games in early against teams that won't look terrible on your resume at the end of the year, but certainly games that you should win. And it's really going to give, really, you know, I think the transfers as much as the freshmen, the opportunity to acclimate with each other, to play together, to have, you know, a reasonable expectation of what they can be and what they can accomplish together before they have to travel to Jacksonville and take on SMU.
Yeah, that's always been the lingering thing for me, is just how long is it going to take to get the chemistry right here? You know, everyone says all the right things in preseason. You know, hey, we've come together faster than we thought, and, you know, this group's really got good cohesion. But again, you want to see it, you know, in live fire drills here. I think, you know, most of us, if you look at the rotation, can, you know, suss out, you know, who we think, you know, maybe not the starting five, but guys we expect to kind of see prominently. You know, it would probably be Kobe Brown, Jerron Coleman. You know, those two are, to me, seem like, you know, you can lock them in for roles in this, you know, lineup. I think you're probably going to see, you know, I think you'll probably see Dejuan Gordon in some capacity, you know, but maybe Pickett at the wing. Combo guard, to me, is where it's sort of open, and, you know, what they do at the five is sort of a floater thing here. But I think you can, I sort of lean that you have a good sense for what they'll do at those three positions. And, you know, then you'll have DeGray, you know, Brookshire, and, you know, Kata in some form, you know, whether or not they're, you know, how they sort of function in pecking order and as reserves. But you can kind of see how this team might set up, but I'm just sort of interested, you know, the one thing that you've been able to do with Zoe the last couple of years is you could watch the first two or three games and you could really get a sense for what his substitution pattern was, when guys would come in, when guys would come off, when certain lineups would go on. So I think that's what I'm interested in. I think we know kind of, you know, what a loose pecking order is going to be, but I'm really sort of interested in just sort of how he manages the rotation and how he tries to, you know, facilitate, you know, that, you know, or try and make that process, you know, as fast as possible to get these guys used to playing with each other and gelling in a sense of rhythm for each other. Because I think that's the biggest thing too, is, you know, we could talk about how fast they'll come together. It's, you know, roles matter, and how quickly does this lineup sort of, you know, break down into that, and how soon can guys sort of have that stability and expectation night in, night out about what they're going to do. So I think that's good for the first three games, because you can kind of really experiment, and but also get guys comfortable if you feel like you've got a good sense of that.
So what can Missouri fans expect from Central Michigan?
10 new bodies and a new coach.
Tony Barbee, a familiar face. He was the coach at Auburn when Missouri joined the SEC, right?
Yep. And then was really, I was at the SEC tournament when the AD came in and said the next day, we've relieved Tony of his duties, and everyone in the room knew who the other guy was going to be. So it was, that's the last time I remember seeing Tony, was kind of a dead man walking situation and just waiting for the press release or the news on Bruce Pearl to come in and take over for him. So.
And then Tony went and worked back under his good friend John Calipari for a while. And then after last year's disaster of a season, Calipari did some restructuring. And one of the restructures was to find a good job for his buddy Tony. And he did. He dropped him at Central Michigan. Where is Central Michigan located? Is that Kalamazoo?
I know that's Western Michigan.
Okay. I know it's the Chippewas.
Go Chips! Fire up Chips! I do know that. That's all I got.
You don't remember?
No, I do not. I do not. I know that Eastern Michigan's in Ypsilanti, and I know that Kalamazoo is home to Western Michigan. Central Michigan, I can't say. It's not Grand Rapids or anything. Or it's not. I don't know where it is. I can't remember where it is. But they were, I think, sub 250 in KenPom last year. They fired Keno Davis, who Keno had pretty much just like gone full bore, like pace and space, you know, was running, gunning. Tony came in and said, we are going to switch that up a little bit.
Mount Pleasant.
So that's sort of the interesting thing here. Stylistically, Tony,
right in the palm of the mitten. you knew I had to make that joke.
I know you did. But Tony's weird. He's played fast at UTEP, then he played slow at Auburn, but you can tell he's definitely from the Cal coaching tree, because that dude loves big dudes. He like went out and got three or four transfers that were all like taller than 6'10". They're not like lumbering bigs. They're kind of like, I'm trying to think here. If you've seen a Kentucky big, they're kind of long, lean. They're more rollers than post up guys. They're rim runners. They're guys you find in the short corner, and they're really there to anchor your back line. But he went out and got a lot of those, and went to the mid-major or low-major ranks to kind of pull some guys up and see if they can give him some juice offensively on the perimeter. But it's still 10 new guys on a roster that was not very good anyway. So this is, if you think Missouri's rebooting, they just ripped everything down to the studs in Mount Pleasant. And it seems like they're trying to quickly get the roster to one that fits what Tony wants. I'm just not sure it's the highest end components there. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of fits together for them.
Yeah. That's definitely a weird hire. They showed a lot of patience
with Keno.
With Keno, he was there for like a while. He was there for a while. I'm going to pull this up real quick because I'm curious. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, almost a decade. I was going to say it was about a decade. And it looks like they almost got it going there for a little while. 23 wins, 21 wins, 23 wins. But, I mean, the Mac is, the Mac's footprint is very similar to the Big Ten. And I feel like the Mac and the Big Ten, so like it's like the Big Ten junior, and the way that there's always like some really good skilled big dudes who aren't particularly athletic. They've typically got pretty good guard play. It's a good league. So I do like that. You know, Cons went out and got a couple Mac schools to sort of open up with. Because I think that at the end of the year, even if those teams are sub 300 in KenPom, like, you know, they may be able to pick up, you know, a couple wins in conference that'll, you know, boost the profile a little bit.
Yeah, I just don't know. I'm more fascinated on what Tony's going to do tomorrow night, because he's got, you know, Jermaine Jackson is a transfer point guard, who's a scoring point, who's 6 feet tall, and, you know, but not a good pick and roll passer, can't score really well around the rim, you know, wants to shoot a lot of, he's an inefficient, you know, scoring guard in the middle as your point. They got Cam Healy, who was, I think, had multiple injuries and barely played last year, and like Albany, and the kid's a pretty good spot up shooter, but he also wastes a ton of possessions on like pull ups. And, you know, they've got a kid named Roth Basanthi, I hope I'm saying his name right, who is kind of a jack of all trades. Like, again, a bit undersized, but he's like a roller. He'll get on the glass. He'll run the floor. Now, Andre Polk is a kid I saw a couple of times, who's out of, I think, the Detroit area, and, you know, long, lean frame, but not a traditional post-up player, but you can bang him and knock him around on the block. like all, like I'm just not sure what this roster really is right now, because he's got bigs who, you know, aren't going to like anchor themselves on the, you know, and just take a post entry, but he has guards who aren't really efficient at distributing to rolling bigs and who want to play in the mid range where the bigs are sometimes trying to duck in. So I'm curious what this roster looks like and how they're going to play tomorrow night. Cause I think they're going to have more raw size than Missouri will, but I feel like in the post they will, but I feel like in almost every other position, Missouri's going to have more length on the perimeter defensively against guys who struggle against length on the perimeter. So it'll be interesting to watch tomorrow night, kind of what Central Michigan, you know, what this lineup looks like and how they're going to try and play. I think Zoe basically said last week that they don't have any like real good scouting information, because there weren't like scrimmages or anything, and Central Michigan only played like one like exhibition game against a D2. So there's not like a lot of real good scouting on this group. Yeah. So it'll be interesting how that plays out.
What's interesting, Central Michigan is the alma mater of Rayshon Simmons, who is Webb's Groves graduate. And if you want the history of, you know, me and my coaching, Rayshon was an incoming freshman. So he was going to be a freshman the summer that was like the last summer that I was coaching. So like he went up with us to like the Mizzou camp, turned into a really, really nice high school player, went to JUCO for a year, went to Central Michigan for three years and had a really nice little career there. I think he's still playing overseas a little bit.
Nice.
So there's your connection to the Dive Cuts podcast and Central Michigan. Matt, how often do you think it's been since that Missouri football and basketball has opened with the same school?
Dave Matter tweeted about this at some point in the fall. I can't remember, but it's probably been a while.
Yeah, I don't remember. I didn't actually look it up. This isn't like a Gary Parrish trivia time. But it is a little bit of an outlier. It doesn't feel like this is something that happens very often.
No, I mean, it's nice that they're supporting the Central Michigan University Athletic Department with bye games. It's very, very nice of Missouri to ship that money to the Mitten. Very nice.
I like the over-under on references to the Mitten on this podcast. We should have set that at the beginning. I would have said 4.5, and I think we're still at the under. So
we are.
I'm going to steer the conversation away before we get any more in. UMKC follows that up. We will podcast after watching Central Michigan and UMKC. So we will have two whole basketball games to go on before we comment on this basketball team. Matt, what are your expectations for the Ruse?
I would expect that they've also done quite a bit of a roster overhaul there. We know they lost Brandon McKissick, who was kind of an all-conference player for them. They've gone out and, you know, I think they've had to try and do what a lot of teams did, which is try and go and find guys who, at least what I've noticed when I've gone through and at least looked at my sort of previews for the mid-majors, they've tried to go in and I think find a lot of role guys. I think that's or guys that are going to be able to give them 9, 10, 11 points a night and see if they can spackle together something. Now, UMKC, I'm pulling up my scouting notes on them. UMKC has a really, really nice kind of like stretch four in Josh Alec. Averaged 15-6 last year. Obviously, McKissick was kind of the lead guy for them, but the one thing that they've been doing for him right now is they've been having him sort of like operate more as a ball handler for them, which will be interesting. And they kind of want to play more five out around him. But he's 6'8", 240, so he's got a sturdy frame, but he's pretty mobile and comfortable in space, can face up a little bit. You know, the only other guy that they really brought in that looks like is going to, you know, have any real seat time and experience is some kid named Evan Gilliard, who averaged 9 points. And New Mexico State, really solid, you know, low to mid-major program out in the WAC. But they're really going to be hoping that Alec Gilliard and another kid named Arco Lamar are all pretty good, I think. After that, it's you know, a bunch of kind of, you know, they got a kid named Marvin Nesbitt who's come back with 10-6. But the rest of that is like a pair of redshirt sophomores. They've got two international freshmen and a couple JUCOs coming in. So it's
a fair bit of amount of experience here, because they do have 1, 2, 3 graduate. Seniors.
Yeah, they went out, and like I said, they went out and they got guys who are 9 to 10 points a game, veteran guys who are going to plug in, and but they're going to need Alec to really kind of drive that for them, and that's really. But the nice thing is that, you know, they've got a, you know, Billy Donlan's got a central piece to build around, which I don't think Central Michigan does at all. But I like getting Gilliard, you know. New Mexico State was, I think, like something like 40-20 while he was out there. So he's played on winning teams at that level. You know, Lamar's a small guy. He's almost kind of like a DeShaun Murray type. He's like 6'5", 235. He's kind of a bruiser, kind of that tweener type. You know, Nesbitt and, you know, Cobb.
How many people are going to remember DeShaun Murray?
I just looked at, I watched some tape of Lamar. I'm like, this guy, he's just kind of. He's squatting.
So that was the dude on Auburn, who played a lot of 4 and even some 5.
And he was like 6'4".
And they played small. And he was good in that role.
Like, yeah, he was fantastic at it because he knew what he was and what his game was. But
he was a transfer to Auburn.
Yeah, he
too,
came
right?
out of he was a Presbyterian transfer. And I remember just Bruce saying like that preseason he loved him because he thought his mentality was great and. You know, set a good culture for them. But that's kind of what they're going with here is, you know, a lot of skill and kind of a stretch four in Alec. And then they're just going to put some older guys around him and see what happens. But they really need 3 or 4 of those old guys to hit to be competitive there.
Yeah, and then he transferred out of Auburn and went to Western Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruce loved him so much he ran him off.
Yeah, yeah. What a shame.
Sorry.
No, I think UMKC is going to be a better indicator or a better test for this team. Just, I think because Donlan's been there, he's established, and he's got some pieces back.
And he's a good coach.
Yeah, I think he's doing. He's got them on about as good of a directory as you can for that sort of program. So it makes sense, you know, you're going to get Tony Barbie, who's completely gutted his roster and has no continuity to a team that lost some significant pieces, but has a focal point and a couple veterans. And then they'll get NIU, which is, you know, a lot like Central Michigan. It only returns like one starter, and then they went out, they have a new coach, and he just, Rashawn Bruno, who... Rashawn Bruno, who his AD said, you're not under any pressure in the next 2 to 3 years, go out and get long-term pieces. So it'll be interesting. You know, I think Tony Barbie's trying to do a quick flip. Donlan's trying to, I think, you know, find a middle way there. And Bruno has been told by his AD, you've got time, build something that's pretty durable. But all of them are winnable games. So it'll be interesting to see how efficiently Missouri dispatches those teams, and if they can do that, just how, you know, creative can they get, and how, you know, weird and wacky can they get with their rotations? That's another thing I tend to look at, is are they able to put teams away quickly enough that they can sort of experiment and tinker? But the schedule sets up for that pretty well.
Yeah, so 3 games against teams that should not really challenge Missouri. Obviously, like, we think UMKC has enough to sort of make it a little more interesting. And this is all dependent on Missouri actually, you know, being worth a damn, which of course we have no idea. So I want to kind of pivot a little bit and see if we can try and determine what our expectations are, what maybe the low end, what the high end, like, what is the range for this team? Is it possible they make an NCAA tournament? Like, what does an NCAA tournament from this team look like?
They're going to have to pick off. You had to pick off 2 of 3 SMU, Wichita State, and Liberty. You know, I, or Utah. I think you've got to get two or three or three or four out of that to swing it. I think you've got just to get to eight or nine non-con wins.
The SEC, and we talked about it last week with Blake Lovell. If you haven't listened to the podcast, here's a plug for it. Go listen. Blake's always good. But the SEC is not great, but
I think it's
really good and deep.
Yeah, I think it. I don't think there's elite teams here like you would see in the Big Ten, but I think there's depth. You know, I don't know if you'd say if there's many top 10 teams, but there are a lot of teams. I think I pointed out in the preview that I did that there's a lot of teams between 13 and 25. So there's good depth in this league, you know, in the top 6 to 7. If you can, you know, if you want to even go down, you know, to 8th, there's probably like 8 teams between like 13 and 45. So there's good depth if there's not like just top end elite talent, top end elite pieces on rosters here.
But I really believe that, I mean, the outlier for me is Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia,
I think, is horrible.
Yeah, Georgia's terrible.
I don't love South Carolina's roster, but we've been here before.
I think
Texas A&M doesn't look like they're going to be good, but we've been here before.
Like, these are the games right now that I look at that are in the lean or pick 'em categories. If you like look at projected margins by like Haslametrics, Torvik, and KenPom, these are your lean games and pick 'em games. SMU, Loyola Marymount, Wichita State, Liberty, Utah, home against Mississippi State, home against Texas A&M, home against Auburn, home against Florida, at A&M, at Vandy, home against Ole Miss, and home against Arkansas. So those are pretty much most of your lean games. There's like, I'd imagine, 10, 11, 12 lean games or pick'em games at this point. So I think you've got to find a way to have a winning record again in those games. Because, I mean, the losses right now are pretty clear. Like, Kansas is, no matter where you look, that's projected to be a 17-point loss. Illinois, 12-point loss. Kentucky, 13-point loss. At Arkansas, you know, 12-point loss. At Ole Miss, 8-point loss. At Alabama, 13-point loss. Mississippi State away, 8-point loss. At LSU, 10-point loss. Like, there are games here, if you look at the forecasted margins on them, that are pretty solid here. But you have a lot of games that sort of float in that 2 to 5 point range that I think that are 1 to 2 possession games that I think are games you've got to find a way to flip. And I think if you're, you know, win totals are always a terrible barometer because it's who you beat, but I think you've got to find a way probably to 18 wins to talk yourself into the bubble, because that would probably be 9-3 in non-con and 9-9 in the SEC, depending on who you knock off and picked off. I think that's what you'd have to do to get yourself into the bubble, is probably 18 wins.
So I think, and this sort of extends into a little bit of the conversation that I was, you know, but we were having a little bit last week, is so you're using a lot of preseason metrics to project, you know, win probabilities and all that stuff around certain games. I'm talking like there's probably going to be one or two teams in the SEC where things go sideways for them. That one of them could be Missouri. And I'm saying that up front because I think what I'm talking about is a scenario where like there's a lot of things that we've put into the preseason metrics, but a lot of metrics are tend to be based upon previous seasons. Last year was a disaster for metrics. We didn't have enough non-con games to play to get a good idea. Missouri, from a metric standpoint, were really probably shouldn't have even been in the NCAA tournament, and yet they were safely in by all accounts. And so I think like that's kind of what I'm like. Texas A&M is a team who 2 seasons ago went 10-8. They were objectively terrible from a metric standpoint. They won some close games. When they lost, they tend to lose pretty badly. And then so last year we kind of thought, hey, this A&M team doesn't look great, but they should be pretty good, and they've got some pieces. And then they had a month of like just not being able to play at all.
Yeah, I think, but you can still look at broadly. Stepping away from, like, I look at it this way. There's a pool of 18 games that, like, even set away that, like, you, yeah, we don't want to, like, get too into the weeds of individual game probabilities or margins, but there are 18 games that are between, that have Missouri as a 4-point favorite all the way down to a 6-point underdog. So swinging it either way as a 1-possession favorite to a 2-possession underdog. There are 16 games there. That to me is like, you've got to find a way if you're going to make the tournament to, you know, probably win a majority of those, just because the wins here are pretty clear. Like there's Paul Quinn College, which won't even probably count, Eastern Illinois, Central Michigan, Northern Illinois, UMKC, and Georgia. I think you and I would feel pretty good, even setting aside analytics, that those should be notch those in the win column, right? You'd feel good about putting those there, those six games safely in the win column.
I mean, sure.
And then there's Alabama away, Ole Miss away, Mississippi State away, LSU away, Arkansas away, Illinois neutral, Alabama away, Kentucky away, Kansas away. Maybe Missouri flips one or two of them, but in most of those games, you know, those 8 games, I feel pretty confident saying Missouri's going to be a, you know, 3-possession or more underdog. So 6-8 is what the record is, you know, if you were to just take straight wins and losses, which I would feel fine with. So it's really, can Missouri find a way to go to get 10 or 12 more wins out of, you know, the games that are somewhere in the middle? Like that to me is sort of where I look at it. Or if they split them, then they wind up somewhere close to like 14 and 16. And that's sort of where I've come down, is I think no matter how this all works out, I think just looking at, you know, even as I went game by game, no matter how I flipped it, I wound up at 14 and 16 as sort of my number, as sort of my baseline. So they've got to find a way to flip 3 or 4 more games to get into the NIT or bubble conversation for the NCAA tournament. So that's how I looked at it.
Yeah. Okay. So on the flip sides, I think my struggle here is I was not really looking at analytics, like what Missouri has to do from a win-loss perspective and winning certain contests. I was more looking at like the roster and the impact of certain players and who
we can do that too.
Might need to outplay expectations. Who does Missouri need to do XYZ versus, you know, they need to win X home game, you know, because my whole thing with like, you know, the projections and the analytics is, again, like it all works to a degree right now, but things happen during the season that like an algorithm cannot project. So Alabama is projected to be very good. According to KenPom, a top 20 team. Alabama comes to play at Missouri January 8th. They are a 6-point win probability. You know, but if Javon Quinterly gets suspended and Jaden Shackelford, you know, tweaks his ankle.
Yeah, but I mean, suddenly, you're asking Missouri, me to make
like, right, and so like that's kind of what I mean. Like, would it surprise me if Missouri beat Alabama at home? Not really. No home game win against anybody in the SEC will ever surprise me because this conference eats itself a lot. There's 14 really good basketball coaches. there's rosters that 13 of them we're going to omit Georgia because I think everybody resoundingly does not like what's going on in Athens. But 13 rosters, which can legitimately win any game. And it would not surprise you. You know, maybe South Carolina, you know, going on the road and beating Kentucky and Rupp, that would surprise you, but who knows? I'm talking like, okay, so for Missouri to be an NCAA tournament team, they need who to do what?
They need Jerron Coleman probably to take firm grasp of the point guard position. This offense, you know,
they need him to be the guy that he was down the stretch for Ball State.
Yeah, they need. But the thing is, that guy could also play off the ball and shot the ball really well. So they need someone to take the reins fully at point guard. To me, that's Jerron Coleman right now, just because historically when freshman point guards have been getting a lot of run, unless they're truly elite prospects, it's been a bad sign. So I think you need, and Davis was not a pure point at his last stop. And no disrespect to Caleb Brown, but if Caleb Brown is coming in and excelling at point guard, then that's such an outlier.
We will all be surprised.
We will all be surprised. So it's got to be Jerron Coleman, I think, really taking control of that point guard position. I think you need, conversely, I think you need to figure out a rotation in the front court. Is it Kata, who's going to, you know, kind of be a more mobile five? And, you know, going to be a roller, you know, a pop guy, you know, someone who can kind of, you know, who may not get as many post touches. You can't play off as much as you could as Tillman, but there's got to be a post rotation that's pretty well delineated and lineups that work around it. Whether that's Brazil, Kata, or Wilmore, they've got to find someone in the post that's going to work well there. My inclination is that Kata might be the best one to sort of take over the reins early there. So can he settle in quickly? They've got to find one or two floor spacers that can knock down shots consistently. Coleman can shoot the ball really well, or had a 13-game sample size. We'll see if that regresses back. It almost certainly will. I don't think he's going to knock down 50% of his catch and shoots again. But can he be a guy that's a 35, 36%, 37% shooter out there? They're going to need that. They had that last year. They had three guys who shot 35%+ on catch and shoots and spot ups. They need that. Your best options are probably going to be Coleman, Brookshire in some sort of reserve role. And then, you know, can Davis stretch his range a little bit? But they need one or two shooters to be effective to keep the spacing right. Defensively, what do they look like? I think that they're going to be a little bit more switchable. They're going to be able to create transition opportunities there. So what's the defensive rotation that looks like there? I tend to think that it would be, my pick would probably be Coleman, Davis, Gordon, and, you know, Brown. And maybe you play a little bit smaller at times at the four, but you want to be switchable and you want to be able to have guys that get out and can play in the run, on the run a little bit. I think that's what they need. They need a solid point guard. They need to have some sort of big situation settled. They need two jump shooters. And they've got to find a way maybe to juice the transition game a little bit more. Do that, and I think that they can offset some of the production that they lost offensively and be pretty sound. So that's not specific players, but those are the conditions I think they need.
No, I think that works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what, like, that's more where I think, like, the discussion is. So for me, like, and kind of pivoting a little bit back to analytics, one of the reasons why I think Missouri is a little undervalued in the analytics is, you know, again, I mentioned, like, you know, KenPom has the projected defensive efficiency ranked 102nd, and the offense at 97th. If the defense is 102nd, that would be Constant Martin's worst defense by like 30 spots since he's been in Columbia. And I kind of don't think that this team is going to be a worse defensive team than one that had to feature Xavier Pinson with as many minutes as he played the last couple of years. I think that a realistic possibility for Missouri is to be top 60 in defense, which would put them, you know, really about what they've been. So last year they were 57th, 2 years ago, 71st, 3 years ago, 51st, 4 years ago, 43rd. So I think if you get into that range of defense, it's going to allow you to have a few more hiccups offensively. And I fully expect this team to be an unfinished product offensively.
And we talked about it a little bit before we came on. Where this team is going to be a little bit different is, you know, people talk about Tillman being gone and, you know, Mitchell Smith has moved out. You know, Mitch wasn't a great shooter at times, but he could still complete plays around the rim. Missouri's shifted away from guards who really struggled. Mark Smith was not good finishing at the rim. Xavier Pinson, not good finishing at the rim. Drew Buggs, not good finishing at the rim. So they've got guys now that are pretty good rim finishers or have more size or at least have shown a knack for doing that. Or they've got a guy like Amari Davis who can play in the mid-range a little bit. So I think that's where offensively I kind of think they can mitigate things a little bit. What they need to do is just keep ball handling and jump shooting pretty steady and hope that the transfer guards they brought in can really ease the pressure on their bigs to, you know, be, you know, kind of the drivers of that interior offense. And to your point about defense, if Zoe can get this team to where they're able to play in transition a little bit more, where they can turn defense into offense while still, you know, remaining 60 or 70, then I think there's some cushion there as well, because they're going to be able to get out and get some easy buckets against teams that aren't in a set defense. So that's sort of where I look at it. I think they've got guys that, if it goes well, can convert some of the defense into some offense for them, and that eases some of the demands they might see in the half court.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of where, for me, the expectations are a little bit higher than maybe some of the analytics. I think Sagarin came out a couple days ago, and it was at Missouri 65th. To me, that feels more about what I expect from Konzel Martin. I realize there's a lot of people that don't like Konzel Martin, but I mean, outside of a year when, like, Jonte's sophomore year, where they thought they were going to have everything kind of running through Jonte, and then 2 weeks before the season, he tears his ACL. Outside of that year, he's been really pretty good in the SEC. He hasn't been great, but he's been pretty good. And I kind of think that's why I'm a little more hopeful about the results of the season, is because I just think his track record is to be at least decent. I expect them to be good defensively and adequate enough offensively to win enough games to probably be in the conversation for the NIT. And if they are in the NIT or just outside the NIT, like, it is what it is. But to me, like, that's what I'm going to be watching. Like, how good is this team going to be defensively? How switchable are they? We've talked about positionless defense now for years, and this is really the first, time where there's a possibility where you could run 1-5 and switch 1-5. Obviously not with Jordan Wilmore on the floor, but, but I think you could probably do that with Kaida. And if you play Brazil at the five, I think that's a possibility.
Yeah. Depending on the coverage you play in ball screens, if what you do with them.
And realistically, like, I think it's very possible you see minutes of Kobe Brown at the five. I think you could see, you know, DeGray at the five also. So, you know, it's one of those things, like, it's tomorrow. And again, next week, we finally get to watch this team play. I'm excited to watch for those reasons. I want to see what they look like. And then, you know, maybe next podcast, we'll be back talking about how bad they are and how this is a team that hopefully will just stay ahead of Georgia.
Yeah. That happens if they lose one of these three games, I think. I just remember watching Kim's first team and you're like, there's growing pains. And then there's what happened in UMKC against the opener where you were like, okay, yeah, that's not just an off sort of night. There's some more structural things wrong here. This thing was not assembled correctly. Therefore it's not functioning properly. So barring that, you know, if Missouri's, you know, ahead 15 or 20 and they try a lineup that just gets creamed on the floor for 2 or 3 minutes, whatever, if it doesn't put the game in doubt, rather, you know, let Zoe tinker and play with the parts here and see what fits together. And, you know, if there's a few stilted periods or, you know, some stretches that don't look great, fine. So long as the outcome's pretty comfortable and they feel like they're able to do what they need to do to get the team ready to go.
So I would recommend that everybody who listens to this podcast, if you haven't already, you can head to rockmnation.com. On the site there is a link kind of at the bottom of the header. You can see it says preseason 21-22 Mizzou basketball previews, recruiting, and more. I would recommend clicking on that. If you click on that, you can read all of our preseason coverage before this game. And I'm pretty sure, Matt, I'm not willing to make bets here, but I'm pretty sure if you start tomorrow morning, you could read everything that we've published before the tip-off at 7 p.m.
You probably could. Your work productivity would suffer, though.
I mean, it is what it is. What's more important here? If you don't have that much time, and I understand that, I would recommend reading Matt's spaced out little piece that we published earlier this morning. Again, it's Monday, November 8th, so it was published on Monday morning, November 8th. Really good piece on what sort of Missouri needs to do to improve some of its shooting numbers. And also, if you have time, I would really recommend our new friend, Matt Watkins, who tweets under the handle Data Mizzou. He also wrote, I love that we had Pace and Space as the last two pieces. As he looked into Missouri's pace and its record, which I really thought was an interesting look into how successful Missouri was in specific, games and when they were playing with sort of specific tempo. Recommend that. And then if you haven't, go check out all the SEC Hoops previews that I work so diligently on. Matt, last night was the first night in months where I didn't have something to write. And it felt weird. Like I picked up my laptop and I was like, I don't have anything to write. This is weird.
Yeah. Now you just get to focus on, you know, firing back up again. And
yeah. So study hall, will be coming. We'll be looking at the numbers and how they played out. Make sure that you are subscribed to this podcast. If you do, it sort of just teleports right into your phone. You can listen to it on any commute or at home, wherever you are most comfortable listening to our podcast. You also will get the wonderful Before the Box Score pod, which they're still going twice a week, Matt, despite Missouri's craterous season here. We're now playing freshman quarterbacks, actually. And going into a game against South Carolina, which could be pretty interesting. Going to be an interesting game this weekend. But listen to BK and Nate. Those guys did a good job. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
It's basketball season. Thank the Lord it's here.
It is here. I've been watching the NBA for weeks. I love it. He's Matt. I'm Sam. We'll be back next week with more Dive Cuts. Thanks for tuning in.